From the Atlantic to the Pacific, from mountain crest to mountain crest, from canyons to the clouds and into the cosmos, we are pumping wattage high and low, plus streaming worldwide on the internet and keeping you company tonight. It's a place to relax and hang out. I'm your host, Joshua P. Warren, and this is Speaking of Strange, giving you the latest and discussing the weirdest. We have assembled the finest team of reporters and the most intriguing guests, and that's why we are your favorite hub in a wild world. So keep it tuned right here. If you have been listening the past hour, you have heard about some of my adventures exploring Colorado. Went out there to shoot a program with George Norrie of Coast to Coast AM and ended up visiting the Stanley Hotel, the Shining Hotel, the place that inspired Stephen King to write the classic novel. And while I was there, I had the pleasure of meeting Callie Sherrill. Now, she has been actively involved in the paranormal for 7 years. She actually grew up in a house with unexplained activity. She's traveled across the country, and for 3 years, she worked as the resident paranormal investigator at the Stanley Hotel there in Estes Park, Colorado. And she has been on a lot of different TV and radio programs. She was on Ghost Adventures with Zach and Aaron and Nick. She's been on Sci-Fi's Ghost Hunters Academy. And she's really interested in that connection between the paranormal, quantum physics, and the law of attraction. Isn't that an interesting combination? And listen to this. This coming May of 2013, she is going to walk the Camino de Santiago. That is a 500-mile trek through northern Spain. Now, this is traditionally a Catholic pilgrimage, but these days there are many reasons to walk this path. For her, it's going to be a personal journey, a spiritual journey, and who knows what she will discover. So tonight, given my recent trip there, I thought it would be absolutely perfect to have her on the air to tell us a little bit more about her experiences and, of course, the Stanley Hotel. Callie, welcome to Speaking of Strange.
Hey, Joshua. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing great. You know, I'm back now. I'm well rested after that trip. And, you know, Callie, I live here where we're broadcasting from in Asheville, North Carolina. The elevation here, it's usually, you're around 3,000, 3,500 feet. But now you are used to much higher elevations. You still live in Colorado, is that right, Callie?
I do, yeah.
Yeah.
We're at about 7,500 feet, so we're more than twice what you are.
Wow. See, I'm lucky. I never had any serious altitude issues, but I know some people did. Now, is that where you are originally from, Callie?
Yeah, I was born in a town just outside of Denver. I've kind of lived here my whole life. I move around every once in a while. I get a whim to go here and there, but I always seem to come home.
Yeah. Well, and of course, it seems to me that everywhere you go around that area of Colorado, there are some great stories, whether you're looking at the pioneers, the miners, the folks who settled the West, or, of course, now we have all of these people who are exploring the ghostly activity in that nice, cold, dry air you have there. Now, of course, I mentioned you lived in a house that was haunted when you were young, so I guess you've been open to this sort of activity a long time, huh?
I really have. I don't know if I would call it open to it, because it actually scared me when I was a kid. And if you had asked me back then, would I grow up and do this for fun? The answer would have been, oh, no.
Yeah.
I've had experiences really my entire life.
So now, what was that sort of one formative, significant experience that made you say, okay, this is profound, I want to explore this deeper?
Well, I saw my very first full-bodied apparition in my house when I was about 15 or 16 years old. I came face-to-face with a man. I was walking across my bedroom, headed to the bathroom in the middle of the night. And you know that feeling when you're looking down at the floor and you're not really paying attention and you almost run into somebody? You kind of throw your hands up because you're surprised that they're there.
Mm-hmm.
And as I came face-to-face with him, he was doing the same thing. We had surprised each other, basically. And now that I've gotten more into all of this and really gotten interested in the theory of alternate dimensions and things like that, it makes me wonder if we weren't just each going about our daily lives and we were each other's ghosts.
Yeah.
Then it scared me. So.
Sure. I think that is a fascinating way of looking at it because, you know, physicality is such a relative thing. And just to, you know, see a ghost, experience that ghost and have that ghost experience you makes you wonder if we are just overlapping, you know, we're ships passing in the night. And it kind of calls into question this idea of the interdimensional. And the funny thing about this place, the Stanley Hotel, is that whether it originally had this reputation or it has been sort of applied to it because of the Stephen King novel, people go to the Stanley expecting to cross dimensions, don't they?
Absolutely. And, you know, who knows whether or not it was haunted before Stephen King. I mean, supposedly when he was there, he had his own experiences that caused him to write the book. It inspired him to write the book. But, of course, it seems to be getting more and more and more haunted as more people go there. And that just leads me to wonder if that's not more of people manifesting what they're experiencing rather than experiencing the manifestation, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Expecting to have something happen, and, wow, it does.
You know, last hour when I was talking about the Stanley, I was comparing it to the filmed versions, and I pointed out that in Kubrick's version, the interiors were mainly done in England, and actually the exteriors were done in Oregon. Is that right?
That's correct, yeah. Stanley Kubrick refused to film at the Stanley Hotel. He actually came to the hotel. He took a tour. He actually visited with the Colorado Film Division, and there is a letter at the hotel signed by him that states why he would not film there, because it was just too close to town. It wasn't remote enough for him. So he chose to instead build a set where he's from in London, where it was going to be easier to film. And then there is a hotel in Mount Hood, Oregon, called the Timberline Lodge, where they did the majority of the exterior scenes.
Okay, because, yeah, I think last hour I was thinking Utah for some reason, but, yeah, it's Timberline Lodge in Oregon. And then, of course, later on there was a miniseries that did shoot at the Stanley, right?
Yeah, Stephen King was not happy with what Stanley Kubrick had done. And in fact, they pretty much went to war with each other. Stephen King accused Stanley Kubrick of hijacking his book, basically. And so he decided to come back in the mid-90s and shoot a mini-series there with ABC that was much more closely related to the book, and almost all of the scenes were exclusively shot at the Stanley.
So now, how did you become, for 3 years, the resident paranormal investigator at the Stanley Hotel?
Wow, it was luck. I call it destiny. I was just meant to be there for a while. I got my start kind of in the paranormal, at least officially, not including the things that happened at my house. But I got started at the Stanley Hotel at an event that Dave Schrader put on there. Ironically, it was his first event. And just really got interested in the hotel and all of the idea of looking for ghosts and that type of stuff. And the more and more people that I got to know, I ended up becoming a member of a team in Colorado. And out of the blue, from 100 miles away, my ex-husband, now ex-husband, we decided that we would move to Estes Park so he could manage a stable up there. And I decided it would be fun just to apply as a tour guide at the hotel. Ironically, I was terrified of public speaking, and it never really occurred to me that I was going to have to stand up in front of 20 or 25 people 3 or 4 times a day and give a tour.
Right.
But they hired me, and I ended up making that work and learned how to give tours, learned a lot about the history. But the upper management of the hotel really saw my passion for what I did in the paranormal, and they saw that they really had a need for somebody who had some validity in talking about what's really happening. And if somebody wants to show a picture, that I could say, you know, this is what it could be, as an alternate explanation rather than constantly believing that it's just a ghost.
Now, we've got a couple minutes before our first break here, and when we come back from that break, we'll talk about the paranormal background. But in the meantime, tell us some about the basic history of the Stanley.
Well, the hotel was built in 1909 by F.O. Stanley, and F.O. had made his money in the Stanley Dry Plate Company, which was the beginnings of modern-day photography. Later, he then made money building the Stanley Steamer Automobile. He built the hotel in 1909. He lived there until he was about 90 years old, really. And then after that, it kind of passed from owner to owner, went through a whole bunch of foreclosures, some really bad periods of time. And then Stephen King came along. He stayed there. He wrote The Shining based on his stay there. And it kind of became a little bit more popular and sort of a tourist attraction based on The Shining. And then, of course, the Ghost Hunters came in 2006 and filmed a couple of episodes there. And from then on, it just really has taken off.
So you definitely feel like the hotel is more haunted post The Shining than it was before?
I would think so. I mean, obviously, I never visited there before The Shining was written. But it just seems like every year there are more and more and more stories. And, you know, Stephen King had experiences there, according to him, but it wasn't as well known or as widely talked about as it is now.
Sure. Okay, well, before we run to this break now, when you were doing your investigations there, I imagine you stayed in a lot of different rooms. Is that right?
Absolutely.
And in room 217 is the one where Stephen King stayed. Is that right?
He did, yes.
Okay, so when we come back from the break, we'll talk about room 217, how it compares to some other rooms where spooky things have happened over the years, and why it is that possibly the more people go to a place like this, the more the paranormal activity picks up. The Stanley Hotel, again, there in Estes Park, Colorado, the place that inspired Stephen King to write The Shining. I'm talking right now with Callie Sherrill, and we're also going to have a link to her blog at speakingofstrange.com. It's Callie's Camino, that's callescamino.blogspot.com. That, again, will be linked up at speakingofstrange.com. I'm Joshua P. Warren. You're listening to the program where the unusual becomes usual. We dig into the amazing, the remarkable, the extraordinary, and yes, the downright weird. Speaking of Strange, we'll be back right after this. The Stanley Hotel is the place that inspired Stephen King to write The Shining. He actually stayed in room 217 when the hotel was almost empty the night before it closed for an extended period. And that's when the thoughts began to percolate. The isolation, the fact that this place was a haunted environment, and that it could somehow change your mental state, could alter the way you think and feel, and ultimately drive you to madness. I remember reading an interview with Stephen King, and someone asked him, "What is The Shining about?" He said, "It's a book about alcoholism, about how the drinking alcohol opens your mind up." We've talked about that on the show. Makes room inside your body for other things to invade you and change you. And I'm talking right now with an expert on the Stanley. Her name is Callie Sherrill. And she, for 3 years, was the resident paranormal investigator at the Stanley Hotel there in Estes Park, Colorado. So, tell us a little bit about room 217. I know that when we walked around the hotel, Callie, you pointed out other rooms where you'd had personal experiences, but is there anything special about room 217?
Well, you know, room 217 was originally what they called the presidential suite. It was where dignitaries would spend the night if they came to the hotel. So people like Theodore Roosevelt has spent the night there. And back in 1911 or 1912, the hotel used to be powered on electricity, but the electricity came from a hydroelectric plant. And when the river wasn't running quickly enough, the hydroelectric plant would fail. And so Mr. Stanley had a gas backup system in the hotel. And so back in 1911, 1912, this had happened. Electricity had failed, and the gas backup system had come on, and the maids had gone out to light the different lights in the rooms. And, of course, Mrs. Wilson, who was the head chambermaid at the time, had gone to 217 to make sure that the dignitaries in the hotel were taken care of. And when she had walked into the room, back then they didn't add the scent to natural gas that they do now, and so there wasn't the smell that signified that there had been a gas leak in the room. When she went to light the lamps, an explosion occurred, which took out the entire wing of that hotel. And Mrs. Wilson was injured in that accident. Believe it or not, she wasn't killed. It did about $60,000 worth of damage, which back in those days was pretty significant. Now, she continued working at the hotel. Mr. Stanley, of course, treated her very well, felt terribly about what happened in the accident. She worked at the hotel until her death when she was approximately 70 or 80 years old. And after she passed away, they began experiencing activity in that particular room as if Mrs. Wilson was still taking care of guests. And when Stephen King was there, he reported that he and his wife dropped their suitcases and then went down to the restaurant to have a meal. And when they came back up, a maid supposedly had unpacked all of their suitcases, hung everything in the closets neatly. And he called down to thank the front desk and was told that there was no maid service on staff and that, in fact, no one had unpacked his suitcases for him.
Wow. I mean, that's pretty extreme. I mean, it's one thing to fill a cold spot, think somebody's tapped you on the shoulder, but to have all of your possessions pulled out and neatly organized, that's incredible.
Absolutely. I can imagine I would like that.
Yeah, those are the good ghosts. Wow. So that alone obviously would have inspired a guy like him. And was that the primary experience he had there that you've heard about?
You know, yeah, that was the primary one, but he also wandered the halls late at night, of course, looking for inspiration and trying to unblock the writer's block that he was experiencing. And when he was on the fourth floor, apparently he says that he came across a couple of children who were playing ball in the hallways, And, of course, there were no children checked into the hotel that night. So that inspired, as you know, the creepy Red Rum girls, and he took it a few steps further.
How amazing to think that, you know, one particular person can come to your establishment and just look at little things and create an international phenomenon. It's just incredible that we live in a world where that can even happen, and it shows you the power of one individual writer's mind. So once he created this super thought form that this place is an absolute portal for all of the strangest mind-body-environment kind of paranormal relationships you can imagine, it makes sense that people would go there and they would maybe at very least have more experiences because they are looking for them. Now they're open, they're aware, they're seeking these things, huh?
Absolutely. And, you know, who knows which direction it goes? Is it because they're seeking them and they're looking for them that they are creating these experiences that didn't exist before? Or are they noticing the experiences that were already taking place and, you know, just suddenly it's coming to their attention? Because I can tell you that some of the experiences that I have had where I have seen things, the apparitions that I have seen have been full-on people. They're not shadowy. They're not see-through. They don't look like ghosts. They look like you and I. But so many people don't notice that they're seeing those things because they just think they're looking at people. But now you think that as people are coming to this family, they're realizing that it is a paranormal hotbed, and so they're noticing these experiences. So I'm not sure which direction it goes. Are they creating them or noticing them?
So let's talk about some of these apparitions you've seen. Please tell us about those encounters.
Well, probably my favorite one happened one night. I was staying at the hotel long term. I was working on a special project, and I was staying in the manor house, and I was returning from working in the admin building. It was about 10 or 10:30 at night, and I walked through the front doors and across the lobby. And the manor house is a much smaller version. It's now called the Lodge, but it's a much smaller version of the hotel, but has the same floor plan. And I walked up the grand staircase, and as I made the turn to continue up the grand staircase, I looked down and I noticed that there was a woman standing at the bottom of the stairs, and she had her hands crossed across the little spiral part of the bottom of the railing, and she was just looking at me. And as I made eye contact with her, she just disappeared. And the strange thing is that she was dressed like she was from a different time period. She was not from our modern day. So that was pretty amazing to me. I also one time was working in the tour office, and I needed some change, and so I had locked the tour office briefly to run down the hall to the cafe down the hallway, and I grabbed some change, and I came back, and as I walked past the big plate glass windows, I noticed a woman sitting in the tour office, and I thought, oh, no, I accidentally locked one of our guests in there, thinking that maybe I just hadn't noticed her as I left. And so I unlocked the door, and I walked in, and I turned the corner to tell her I was sorry for leaving her behind, and she had disappeared. She wasn't there anymore.
Okay, well, we're going to take another break here, and when we come back, I'd like to talk about some of the experiences that you had working with Ghost Adventures and Ghost Hunters Academy, because I know when we were walking around the hotel, you were telling me about some very physical-type experiences that occurred to them and things that you, as an employee of the hotel at the time, were able to basically verify were not normal. Folks, I'm talking with Callie Sherrill, and her blog is Callie's Camino, that's CallieasCamino.blogspot.com. From the couch to the Camino, and we're going to have that linked up also for you at speakingofstrange.com. I think I'll also make sure we have some pictures here on the website from my trip to Colorado. Haunted Rockies. I'm Joshua P. Warren. You're listening to Speaking of Strange.
Delia, oh Delia, Delia all my life. If I hadn't shot poor Delia, I'd have had her for my wife. Delia's gone, one more round, Delia's gone. I went up to Memphis, and I met Delia there. Found her in her parlor, and I tied her to her chair. Delia's gone, one more round, Delia's gone. She was low down and trifling, and she was cold and mean. Kind of evil make me want to grab my submachine. Delia's gone, one more round, Delia's gone. First time I shot her, I shot her in the side. Hard to watch her suffer, but with the second shot she died. Delia's gone, one more round, Delia's gone. But jailer, oh jailer, jailer, I can't sleep. Cause all around the bedside I hear the patter of Delia's feet. Delia's gone, one more round, Delia's gone. So if your woman's devilish, you can let her run. Or you can bring her down and do her like Delia got done. Delia's gone, one more round, Delia's gone.
Welcome back to Speaking of Strange. We're talking about ghosts, phantoms, apparitions, strange things, and some places on the planet that appear to enhance that kind of activity. One place that anybody would be interested in is the Stanley Hotel that, of course, inspired Stephen King to write his classic novel, The Shining. And for 3 years, Callie Sherrill worked there as the resident paranormal investigator, and she ended up doing a lot of different appearances on TV. Tell us about some of your experiences with ghost adventures and ghost hunters, Callie.
I had a lot of really cool experiences, and I think one of my favorites probably has to do with the one that I told you about with Ghost Adventures. When they came to the hotel, of course, they wanted to stay in all of the best rooms, and so I took them around and I gave them a tour. And I had told them about room 407, which is my favorite room in the hotel, where I had had my very own experience, including someone, well, first of all, hearing footsteps in the hallway just outside of the room, and then having someone sit down on the bed next to me, to the point where my friend who was asleep experienced it, woke up and experienced it as well. And I had told the guys about this, and of course, they thought that was pretty cool, and so they had decided that that would be the fourth room that they would include in their episode. And so the three guys would each sleep in three of the different haunted rooms, and then they would set up 407 as their home base. And so in 407, Billy Tolley and I were sitting in there, and we're outside of the camera shot, and we are watching the split screen that you can actually see on the episode. And we're looking for any kind of anomalies that are taking place in the three rooms where the guys are trying to sleep. And as we're sitting there, we all of a sudden hear really loud footsteps come down the hallway. Now, this is very strange because that floor is actually closed off for filming. Nobody is allowed to be up there other than the three guys because they don't have a crew with their particular filming style. And so we're wondering who's coming down the hallway, and all of a sudden we start to hear Zach's voice outside of our room. But the strange thing is that we can see Zach on the split split-screen TV in room 401 trying to sleep. So we know Zach is not out there. So, of course, we jump up, run over, open the door, and there's nobody there. Just something mimicking Zach, apparently. So that was pretty interesting.
Yeah, that is so weird because, you know, when you told me this story, I told you that, you know, Zach has said to me that at times his group has gotten EVP-type recordings that sound exactly like his voice, but he says it's not him speaking at all. And, I mean, it almost is like there is this sort of paranormal hall of mirrors in which we have these doppelgangers or imposters, whatever you want to call them, that can take energy from us and reuse it in some way. And that becomes so bizarre and makes people begin to question who they themselves are. And that plays in beautifully with this reputation of a site like the Stanley, huh?
Absolutely. And, you know, when you get into the whole quantum physics and the multiple world theory, and, you know, every time you make a choice, the theory is that maybe you split off into all of these different endings, basically, or continuations, really. But it just makes you wonder, did he make a choice that day where he split off into two different ways, and we actually experienced both of them by watching one on camera and hearing the other one take place outside the room? It was fascinating to me.
So now, did you have similar experiences working with ghost hunters, or did you even do that at the Stanley?
I did, yes. I worked with them at the Stanley.
Okay.
I didn't work as closely with them as far as the filming and the investigation part of it, because they, of course, have an entire crew, and the way that they do everything is much different.
Mm-hmm.
So I really didn't have a lot of experiences paranormally with them.
So let's say somebody listening to this program says, okay, I have always wanted to go to the Stanley, and now I'm going to do it. What advice would you give somebody, maybe it's a group, maybe it's an individual, who wants to go there and have the highest chances of experiencing something amazing?
Well, if they really, really want to experience something amazing, I think they need to find a way to go to the concert hall. And I know that they do different tours down there, and I know that they do like a five-hour ghost hunt at night. In my opinion, the concert hall is the most active building on the entire property, short of the carriage house, but the carriage house is condemned and closed up. So if you want the second choice, it's the concert hall. But, you know, stuff happens throughout the entire hotel. So if you aren't able to get into the concert hall, or you aren't able to pay the prices that they ask for the more haunted type rooms, don't count it out. Things happen everywhere, and it's actually a pretty amazing place. It has an energy all to itself.
So now, as a person who is from Colorado, who has this interest between, you know, the paranormal, quantum physics, etc., what do you think the geography of those mountains may sort of supply, if you will, to these experiences?
Well, if you're standing in the tunnel underneath the Stanley Hotel and you put your hand on the rock that's literally supporting the hotel, you can feel the vibration of the rock, and that's just energy. And if you go in there, you can't even use a K2 meter or an EMF detector, because the EMF, just from the rock alone, is off the charts. And if you take all of that energy, it's like charging up the environment. And in my opinion, I think that just makes it easier for the spirits to come through. You know, however it is they need to come through, it's just that energy charge. And so I think that that has a lot to do with it.
Yeah, the amount of energy there, meant in a very literal way, from all that rock moving around, it allows that window of access to open up a little more easily. We may not understand the cause and effect, but that, you know, going back to the experience you had when you were very young, that maybe we need that type of sort of thinning of the veil, for lack of a better term, for us to see them and them to see us. And I always find it intriguing when you throw animals into the mix. I wrote a book about animal spirits and also how that animals respond to the paranormal. And there are these amazing groups of elk just running all around that property. Can you ever look at those creatures and determine something about how active the paranormal events are going to be that day?
I have never really paid attention to it, honestly, because there's just so many elk that you just don't even notice them after a while, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
I can tell you, though, that I feel energy probably very similar to an animal does. I have a heightened sense of that. And I can walk in and literally feel the difference between if it's going to be a good day or a bad day as far as experiencing paranormal activity.
Okay, we have about a minute before our break, and just quickly, when you were also working with Ghost Adventures, I just recalled you said that Nick was going to go to one of the rooms there, and the door just kind of opened up itself in front of him, right?
It did. It's right on the episode. He stuck the key in, and you get the little error code, and you see it right on camera, and the door shouldn't open, and it literally opened right before him.
And what room was that?
412.
So at this point, then, we can say that rooms 217, room 407, and room 412 would be top of the list, maybe, for an investigator. Would that be safe to say?
Absolutely.
Yeah, okay. And, that'd be great to go back there, do our own little investigation, set up in those rooms. But, you know, not just do a night, do a week. Do a few weeks. That's what you have to do. And does this hotel ever close down these days, Callie?
Nope, they're open 365 days a year. And my favorite thing is that I got to be there for 3 years and really pay attention to all types of activity as well as, you know, patterns and things like that. You usually don't get to do that as a paranormal investigator. I was really lucky.
Okay, when we come back for our last segment here this hour, I want to talk about your upcoming trek, the Camino. 500 miles Callie is going to walk through northern Spain. That's what her blog is about. From the couch to the Camino, calliescamino.blogspot.com, linked up at Speaking of Strange. Sounds like quite a challenge, huh? We'll ask her more about what this is and why she wants to do it. You're listening to the show where the unusual becomes usual. I'm your host, Joshua P. Warren. You're listening to Speaking of Strange. final hours, excuse me, the final minutes of hour number two on tonight's program. You're listening to Speaking of Strange. I'm Joshua P. Warren. Coming up next hour, we call it the Dark 30 Hour. That's when we dig into the more outrageous and controversial news of late. Not for the kiddies, not for the easily offended. Hope some of you will stick around for that, if that is appropriate content for you. And I'm wrapping up this conversation with Callie Sherrill. She is a paranormal expert, and she has spent years at the Stanley Hotel. And, of course, in talking with her recently, I have learned that, heck, May of next year, 2013, she is going to walk 500 miles through northern Spain. It's called the Camino de Santiago. Callie, what is this?
When you put it that way, wow. You know, it really is it's a spiritual journey, and like you had mentioned in the intro, it's a Catholic pilgrimage traditionally, but I'm not Catholic. I've just been drawn to it in a really kind of strange set of circumstances. And the more that I learn about it, the more that I realize now that there are as many reasons to walk it as there are people who do. And it just, for me, it feels like opening up kind of an energetic, I don't know, it's a door or a portal in myself is really what I'm looking for.
Now, for those who are listening here in North Carolina, again, we are broadcasting from Asheville. If you were to set out and walk from Asheville all the way to Cape Hatteras in the Outer Banks, that would only be 438 miles. So, again, for those who are using the state of North Carolina as a reference, I want you to realize how far a 500-mile walk is. How long is this going to take, do you think, Callie? How long are you setting aside for this?
No, I am allowing myself 2 months to do it.
Mm-hmm.
50 of those days will be walking. 10 days will be resting or sightseeing. And so 10 miles a day, to me, is a realistic goal. There are many people, however, who do this in 30 to 35 days. I personally don't want to walk that fast. I don't want to push myself that hard. But I guess it's entirely possible. And that's the standard schedule for people who walk it.
Can you speak Spanish?
I can now.
I have
recently been taking Spanish classes,
uh-huh.
And, you know, a kind of a full immersion type Spanish classes with a personal private tutor who's teaching me how to speak. I'm doing okay. And I really think that if I were to get lost, I would be able to speak to somebody and at least communicate the basics. I'm not going to be fluent by May, but I will at least not be that boorish American who expects everyone to speak English instead of trying to come their direction.
Sure.
So that's my goal.
Now, you're not doing this alone, are you?
Yes, I am.
Really?
By myself.
Oh, my goodness. What a rebel you are.
My brother calls it the trip where I'm going to get my throat slit.
Yeah, I sound like your brother. Then that's what I'd be telling you probably the whole time.
Well, no, the thing about the Camino is it's a thousand-year history, a tradition in Spain.
Mm-hmm.
They are very proud of the pilgrims who walk this pilgrimage, and they take care of you. And any type of a crime that's committed on the Camino is punished so much more severely than if it were just somewhere else in Spain that people they're not even interested in trying to commit a crime there.
Yeah.
It's very safe.
And I mean, I presume that you'll be doing everything you can to document this, videotape it, blog about it, and kind of vicariously let people take this with you, right?
Yeah. You know, I plan to blog it. I love to write. That's really where my passion is. But I have a friend who's possibly interested in helping me, and if not him, somebody else will come along. I just feel it in my soul, where I will send video logs to people or vlogs, and somebody will put it together and let people know kind of where I'm at, what I'm doing, because literally I am getting off of my couch and walking 500 miles. I am not an athletic person. I've never been an athletic person. And I don't know what's drawn me to do this, but it is very strong. The pull is amazing.
Mm-hmm.
And I have no doubt that it's happening.
Well, you know, we have about 30 seconds here. Anything else you want to plug other than your blog right now?
You know, that's what I'm focusing on. So if anybody wants to follow along at calorscamino.blogspot.com, please give me any encouragement that you'd like to give. That's what I'm looking for right now.
Well, Callie, I wish you all the best, and I will be with you in spirit, eating cheesy puffs and drinking beer. And I thank you so much for being on the show. It was a pleasure to meet you, and just really lucky for me that I was able to take that special tour of the Stanley during my very brief window there. So thank you so much for being on the show. Everybody, that's Callie Sherrill. We're going to take a break. When we come back, it's the Dark 30 Hour. I'm Joshua P. Warren.